Walking in the woods one day, I met a man who said that he was magic. Magic, wonderful things he said. Oh yeah, a pointed hat upon his head. New-eyed people laughed and cried. Why they lived and why they die, yeah, 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 die, yeah, 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 die, yeah, 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 na 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 na. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Weren't the 70s a crazy time? Weren't they a bonkers time, full of all kinds of creativity and general weirdness and experimentation and goodness knows what? And today I would like to talk about one of the more interesting films that was produced in the 1970s, in 1974 specifically, a British film called Zardoz. And I'd like to talk about this because it is very, very, very relevant to all of the kind of things I've been talking about on this channel of late, of the rise and fall of civilizations, of why civilizations rise and fall, the escape of civilization from the surrounding dysgenic chaos, and all of this kind of stuff. It is all encapsulated in this very, very interesting film, which stars Sean Connery. Now, the essence of the movie is this. We live in a dystopian future in which civilization essentially has collapsed. As far as I can work out, the more intelligent people, they are called the Eternals, they have escaped to a kind of Neo-Byzantium, where they have closed themselves off from the surrounding, you know, low IQ, brutal, violent people, who, of course, as we know, the evidence indicates that what we are selecting for at the moment is low intelligence and elements of psychopathic personality. And this results in the collapse of civilization because civilization is correlated with high intelligence and with pro-social traits. So that's what happens. It's a late stage civilization. It's the winter, and it seems that the more intelligent people, who perhaps are higher in certain monumentalist religious values, it's not that they don't seem to be very religious in the film, but that kind of thing, they escape into a Neo-Byzantium, into a kind of utopia. So you have cut themselves off, but in the film they continue evolving, and so you have this distinction between the Eternals, who are in the sort of Neo-Byzantium escape place where civilization is being maintained, and the Brutals. Now the Eternals have carried on, and they've carried on reaching, I suppose, the kind of singularity that everyone talks about, the kind of transhumanism. They've really gone for it. They've managed to achieve this transhumanism that a lot of people on my channel talk about. They say, oh, well, we can escape this through transhumanism, through selective breeding, through eugenics, through whatever. They seem to have managed to create that utopian or dystopian or whatever you want to call it, brave new world in which they no longer have sex. Sex is something they consider brutal and disgusting. They are eternal. They live forever. And when they get killed, they simply come back to life again. So they can never die. They are the Eternals. They've lost all sexual interest and whatever. They're extremely intelligent. They have incredible levels of knowledge. They know just about everything. They are civilization taken to the final possible degree. They are transhumans, a new form of non-sexual humans who live forever. They are surrounded by the remnants, you know, the dystopia, by the low IQ hordes, by the what's called the Brutals. The Brutals are just normal humans. They do have sex and whatever, and they're just brutal and vile people, and they have to be controlled by the Eternals. And so the Eternals set up a kind of a false god called Zardoz, and Zardoz tells them that they should breed as little as possible, and basically they should kill each other, which they do in order to keep the population down, to keep the population in check. And so in that way, it's a little bit like the Spartans, and how the Spartans would go out among the Helots and randomly kill people in order to keep their slave population, the Helots, in check. That then is the essence of society. Now, what goes wrong in this is that Zed, who played by Sean Connery, who is one of the Brutals, manages to get inside the monument to the god Zardoz, and thus enter the vortex, i.e. enter this sort of weird, in a way, hippie utopia. which is where the Eternals live. Now, what you find in this utopia is something extremely interesting, that they are basically bored out of their mind. A lot of them are so bored out of their mind, they become catatonic. These people are known as the apathetics, and they just sort of stand around, just like, you know, just totally bored, unwilling and unable to do anything. Anybody who questions the system, anybody that does anything to try to undermine this system where you don't die, where life goes on forever, where you don't have sex, whatever, those people's punishment, so if they spread any kind of negative feeling in the society, is to be made into a renegade. And this is that you live forever, but you live forever as an elderly, ugly old person. So you're senile. You live forever, but you're senile and you have a very, very unpleasant time. So that is the punishment if you misbehave in this society. Now, I won't give away the plot of what happens in this society, but in this film, but it raises all kinds of fascinating issues. And the most interesting issue it raises really is what it would be like if civilization didn't collapse. What would transhumanism be like? What would it be like to never die? And it seems that the answer is that it would be this kind of utopia would be its own very special form of hell. And the reason for this is a topic I've looked at a number of times on this channel, which is that of evolutionary mismatch. Whether we like it or not, we are essentially evolved to live on the savannah. We are basically an advanced form of ape, and we have the inclinations and desires of an advanced form of ape. To some extent, some of us, as we have as we have split up and moved around as a species, have evolved to various different environments. Some of us have evolved to an agricultural environment. Some of us have evolved to a hunter, still have remained evolved to a hunter-gatherer environment, and some of us have evolved to a highly tight-packed, dense environment. But either way, we are evolved to a specific evolutionary niche. We are evolved to a specific way of living. And if we deviate from that, if we are put in a situation that is different from that, then we become increasingly unhappy. We have what is known as dysphoria. And as I have discussed, it could be argued on other videos, it could be argued that the way that the rise and fall of civilization works is that you select for intelligence because there's cold, harsh conditions, Darwinian conditions. These select for intelligence. As a result of that, you end up with civilization. But as a result of that, you create a dysphoria, you create an evolutionary mismatch in which people are not living in the conditions to which they are evolved to live. They are evolved to live with people who are genetically very similar to them. They are evolved to live with people of their sort of broader sort of genetic tribe. They are evolved for males and females to operate and interact in certain ways. And they are also evolved to basically be confronted with death all the time, because death is central to life in all species. You struggle to live, and life is hellish, brutish, and short, and you are surrounded all the time by death, and by the fear of death, and by the possibility of death. Every day needs to be a struggle to survive. Now, if you take these conditions away, you create dysphoria, and if you create dysphoria, people become depressed. People become bored. People become depressed. And in the case of people who are species rather who are self-conscious, they can start thinking about the meaninglessness of life, the pointlessness of life. You know, what's the point? They've got time and energy to think about it in a way they wouldn't be able to if they were just surviving. Because if they were just surviving, they'd be highly instinctive. And one of their instincts, in the case of humans, as I have shown in many videos, religiousness. Religiousness is strongly genetic. Religiousness is adaptive in terms of fertility, in terms of mental health, in terms of physical health. It's definitely an adaptive trait that is our instinct. It hits in at times of stress. And so when you take that, particularly mortality said, it's the fear of death. If you take that away, if you take those conditions away, those are the conditions we're adapted to, then of course we start thinking, what's the point of life? Is there a God? What's the point of going on? That sort of thing. And also, we just become, we are evolved to struggle for resources and to every day to try to survive. Take that away, give us everything we can possibly need, and give us that combined with high intelligence and self-consciousness, and we'll just become bored and start thinking, what's the point of doing anything? People who are more intelligent are more environmentally sensitive, because if you're more environmentally sensitive, you can take in more information. And if you can take in more information, you can solve problems better. And if you can solve problems better, you'll have a higher IQ. That's the essence of intelligence. And so therefore, those people will be impacted by this first. They will stop breeding. The result of that is the intelligence of the society goes down and collapses back to a Darwinian selection pressure levels, and therefore cycles carry on again. If that didn't happen, if we carried on getting more and more intelligent forever, then eventually you would create such an extreme sense of dysphoria, everybody would be highly environmentally sensitive and highly intelligent, that nobody would want to have children, and the entire population of humanity would die out. And this is why we cannot have this transhumanism, this eugenics. We cannot continue getting more and more intelligent forever, because if we do, then the result is that we lose our instincts, we lose our desire to breed, we lose indeed our desire to do anything, we become depressed, and we just stop bothering. And this is what you see in the film, that even though they've got this utopia, the one thing we hate is death. Death is awful. Nobody wants to die. Nobody wants their family to die. It's a terrible thing. And you have this utopia in Zardoz in which they manage to get over this, but the result of it is that they're just bored. They're just absolutely bored. They can't die, they're bored, and it's just awful. And the more perhaps environmentally sensitive ones thus become just catatonic. They just can't cope. It's just too boring. And they just, like children in a Romanian orphanage in the late 80s, they just rock back and forward, just bored out of their minds. There's nothing to stimulate them. What's the point if there's no possibility of death or destruction? And this is consistent with a number of papers. One of them is called Mortality, Salience and Desire for Offspring by Fritcher et al. Another one is called From the Grave to the Cradle by and Goldenberg, and they both show that if you elevate mortality salience, then people desire to have children. And if you reduce mortality salience, it reduces the desire to have children. So mortality salience, fear of death, makes you want to have children. Why? Well, one possibility, perhaps the more prosaic possibility, is that when you realise your own mortality, you realise that you want to pass something on, and you want to have a sense of eternity, and so therefore you have a desire to have children when confronted with your own mortality. Another possibility is simply that the mortality salience is the evolutionary match. Give us the mortality salience and our normal adaptive instincts hit in. And our normal adaptive instincts are to have children. Take away the mortality salience, our normal adaptive instincts don't hit in, because we're in an evolutionary mismatch, and therefore we become maladaptive. We're in an environment which we're not evolved, and we do maladaptive things, and therefore we don't desire to have children. And so what you the more sensitive people, i.e. the more intelligent people in our own time, therefore don't desire to have children, because they're more sensitive to the environment and they're in an evolutionary mismatch. And that's what this film encapsulates very, very well indeed, I think, is this fundamental paradox whereby, as humans, we hate death, we fight death, we fear death, we pray to God, or if we believe in God, or want to not bring us death. But if we are not surrounded by death, we are in an evolutionary mismatch, and we will just stop bothering, and we will become, as we are becoming, catatonic, and we won't care, and we won't have children, and we'll die out. And it will therefore be those who have a strong instinctive desire to breed, i.e. the brutals, who will come to dominate the world. And what happens in the film eventually is that these Eternals, they are sort of given the kiss of life, literally, actually, the kiss of brutalness, by Zed, by this character, and therefore that they are awakened, and suddenly they embrace death, and they have a desire to die. And then some of them desire to leave the utopia of the vortex, and to go out into the world of the brutals, just to live, just to have that feeling of being alive, just to embrace embrace life, and embracing life inherently involves embracing death. So I think that the film is absolutely fascinating and it is really worth watching, and I would like to thank the gentleman who commissioned me to do this video and to watch the film, which I wouldn't otherwise have watched. I mean, yes, it's 1974, it's with Charlotte Rampling, it's extremely pretentious. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more pretentious film, way more pretentious than The Wicker Man, possibly one of the most pretentious 1970s films I've ever seen. Yes, there's all kinds of things in it that don't make any sense. Yes, there's almost like a silliness to it. I mean, to try and take it seriously when you've got a god figure. And that's another thing it brings in, which is conspiracy theories, which is the idea that it is the elite deliberately lying to the people in order to control them. And that's a perfectly reasonable thing. That's happened throughout history. We know that in the medieval period, the people that were high up in the society and could read Latin and whatever, they knew that there were lots of contradictions in the Bible and there were lots of contradictions in religious doctrine and all this sort of thing. But they took the view that this should be kept in Latin. This shouldn't be explained to the people, because if it were explained to the people, then the people might lose faith and lose hope and might not be able to be controlled by the religion. That would be a terrible thing. So you have that kind of idea as well. But it really is a fascinating little film, Zardoz, and of course and Zardoz comes from Wizard of Oz. So the Wizard of Oz, of course, sets himself up as a false god to control the people, even though he's really just a man. But anyway, it's a very interesting film that encapsulates a lot of what I've been talking about on this channel. So as a bit of light relief from all the black pills that I've been dropping of late, I would strongly suggest that you watch it. And I hope this is a bit of interest. And if it has, please subscribe. It really helps me do that. Remember, you can I live stream Mondays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. You can see ways to help the show below. And also, it's always worth listening to a bit of Mark Bolan, you know? He was a wizard and he was my friend. He was a wizard and he was my friend. He was. Na 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 na